The House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome to the Oregon Capitol. I see that there are many people here today from the Oregon Connections Academy that want us to be aware that you're here and we see you. I also, just for your information and to ask for some help, it is wonderful to have you here. We are not hearing any bills today related to virtual schools. We do have a hearing today on bullying, and we have many folks in the hallway that have traveled to testify on that bill, who have worked on that bill. So if it's at all possible to, we do have an overflow room for this hearing, but we do want to make sure that the folks who have come today to testify on this bill have room to come into the room and do so. So if you see people that are coming in and are looking for a seat, if you wouldn't mind moving to the overflow room to make room for the folks that are testifying on bills today, it would be helpful. But also just want to be clear how wonderful it is to see all of you here, and all of your bright red shirts are very well noted, and we'll be taking up the issue of online schools within the next several weeks. Are there any other comments before I move on from there? Great. So as you are in the room, please take out your cell phones and turn them not just to silent, but all the way off. It interrupts the system that records our voices. And I'm going to first open up a public hearing on HJM 10. Kevin, can you give us a brief?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJM 10 urges Congress to amend the IR, the Internal Revenue Code, Section 529, to allow accounts in qualified tuition programs to be used for repayment security of student loans when the designated beneficiary or student is a student entering college between 2004 and 2012. We do have both a fiscal and a revenue with respect to this, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And colleagues, this is a bill that Speaker Hunt and I dropped in. This is in response to the 529 hearings that we had earlier this year. And basically what this does, it urges Congress to make a tweak in the Internal Revenue Code that would allow those families who lost a lot of money in those conservative accounts, whose children are either currently in college or near college, to be able to go to school, take out a loan to pay for school, and then use their 529 money to repay those loans. And the idea behind this is if we can give them a little bit of a cushion to make back what they have lost in this extraordinary time, it will allow some of these students to be able to actually go to school. And we heard from some of those families during that hearing. And is there anybody here to testify on HJM 10? There is not. Is there any discussion from the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm not sure that this is going to be any solution for anybody, but it could be, depending on when the market turns around, and it just gives one more tool to their tool chest.
Thank you. And I do know that Senator Wyden has expressed an interest in having this letter from us so that he can continue to move forward. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, I'm closing the public hearing on HJM 10 and opening a work session on HJM 10.
Madam Chair, I move that we send House Joint Memorial 10 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dembrough has moved House Joint Memorial 10 to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Hutchins?
Aye.
Representative Trump?
Aye.
Representative Mallor?
Aye.
Representative Vogel?
Excused.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dembrough?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
And Chair Gelder?
Aye. Having received the necessary votes, the bill passes. And Representative Parker, would you carry this bill on the floor, please?
Of course.
Well, thank you. So Representative Parker will carry the bill, and with that, I will close the work session on HJM 10. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2599. And Kevin's going to give us a rundown of this bill in a second, but at your place you'll find the bill as well as revenue impact and a dash one amendment, which the proponents of the bill are urging us to adopt. And you'll also find at your desk some testimony submitted by the Oregon School Boards Association. Kevin, will you give us a brief rundown of the bill as it would be with the dash one amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before you, committee is HB 2599. Primary responsibility of this bill is to amend the definition of harassment, intimidation, and bullying found in ORS 339.351. It includes within the definition any act that interferes with the psychological well-being of a student and any act that may be based on a protected class status. Those class status items are stated in the bill. Further, it also puts new requirements with respect to harassment, intimidation, and bullying policies that districts are supposed to keep with them. The Dash 1 amendment further clarifies language within the definition of harassment, intimidation, and bullying. Further, the Dash 1 amendment will remove language requiring the harassment, intimidation, and for short, I'll just refer to it as the harassment policy, to include a statement, removes the requirement that the policy include a statement on how a person who is a member of a protective class may file a discrimination complaint. The amendment also removes from the school district's reporting requirements to the Department of Education and further encourages rather than requires districts to incorporate harassment prevention training into their existing training programs for students and employees. This does have, as the chairwoman indicated, a revenue. However, we do not have the fiscal yet with respect to this matter.
Thank you very much, Kevin. And we have a good number of people here today to testify to us, some of whom will tell us some difficult stories. And I don't know about the rest of you, but since about the middle of last week, my home phone and my office phone have been overwhelmed by telephone calls from all across the state from families who are dealing with this issue for a whole variety of reasons. So I think that this is an important bill that we're taking up today, and I look forward to learning more about it. So our first panel is Dana Hepper, Morgan Allen, and Rachel Cushman. Hey, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thanks so much for the opportunity to testify in favor of House Bill 2599. My name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Advocacy Director for Stand for Children. We are a citizen voice for children that uses the power of grassroots action to help ensure that all children get an excellent public education and the support that they need to thrive. And I'm also here to speak on behalf of the Safe Youth for All Schools Coalition, which was formed to support House Bill 2599, and this coalition includes Stand for Children. It also includes the Latino Network, Disability Rights Oregon, Oregon Education Association, Pan-Asian Alliance, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, Oregon Students of Color Coalition, the YWCA, the Urban League, and many more. I want to do three things in my testimony. First, I want to share with you the research behind bullying, and then share a couple of personal stories from people who've experienced bullying at school. And finally, want to lead you through this bill, specifically in the amendments that we're supporting. So first, the research. Bullying and harassment are far too common in our schools. And according to the latest data from the Oregon Healthy Teens Survey, a full 31% of 11th graders and a shocking 41% of 8th graders say that they have experienced bullying and harassment within the past 30 days. Minority students report even higher rates of bullying. In the 8th grade, 43% of Latino students and a full half of African American students report being harassed in the past 30 days at their school. And nationally, rural students are even more likely to experience bullying than urban students. They're 26 more likely to experience bullying. And furthermore, students with developmental, psychological, and physical disabilities are at a substantially higher risk for being bullied than other students. You will hear real stories from several youth and advocates today, and they will put a human face on the epidemic of bullying in our schools. And as you hear these stories, I really encourage you to consider the impact of this problem on Oregon youth. 1 in 10 of our students who drops out does so because of repeated bullying and harassment. Study after study finds that youth who suffer at the hand of bullies are much more likely to experience depression, substance abuse, anxiety, behavioral problems, and even attempt suicide. And these consequences continue into adulthood. And furthermore, consider the impact on the bullies themselves. Unchecked bullying leads to criminal behavior among adults. And youth who act as bullies are 6 times more likely to have a criminal conviction by their mid-20s. Fortunately, we can do something. We know that effective anti-bullying policies work. They can cut the incidence of bullying in half. House Bill 2599 would put Oregon on this path by strengthening and enhancing our current anti-bullying statute. And I just want to share a couple of firsthand stories from people working and going to school in our public schools. First, Alex Pickett. And I think we're submitting testimony from Alex today. Alex is a counselor at Waluga Junior High School who works closely with Stanford Children's Portland chapter chair. And she asks us to reflect upon the impact of bullying on all of our families. She asks, "Did you know that your son sits in class deciding the safest path to his next class instead of focusing on instruction? And that he often doesn't eat lunch because a bully takes it and dumps it in the trash. His learning is being compromised daily." Consider also the story of Paige Stoudemire, who's involved with Stanford Children's chapter in the North Clackamas School District. In her written testimony, she also writes about her second grade daughter who goes to school in the North Clackamas School District. She writes, "She has been a victim of bullying within the school by another second grader for over a year. The bully has bitten my daughter 6 times. She's pulled out chunks of her hair. She slapped my daughter so hard in the face that it left a mark for several hours after the incident happened." She goes on to describe the psychological impact of this repeated bullying that is yet to be addressed by the school. "The impact of this bullying and harassment has been a struggle for me as a mother. My daughter's afraid to go for school for fear that this bully may act on her threats of hurting her or killing her. I struggle with her to get ready for school, or she tells me that she is sick and cannot go to school. She doesn't feel safe or secure at her school. She has no motivation, nor is she inspired to be at the school. Her schoolwork has suffered because of the bullying." Oregon's existing anti-bullying statute does not go far enough to help parents and families address productively the ways to solve incidents of bullying. So that brings us to House Bill 2599. The statute that we're changing with House Bill 2599 is ORS 339.351, and it defines bullying, harassment, and intimidation almost exclusively on the basis of physical harm. But we know, and I'm sure many of us have experienced, that a bully does not have to come to blows in order to land a serious blow on a student. House Bill 2599 further clarifies hostile educational environment to include psychological well-being in that definition. It also adds class status to the bullying definition to make it clear that harassment of a student, specifically because they're African American or Latino, Christian or Hindu, gay or straight, or living with a disability, is just that. Harassment. While existing statute simply states that school districts must have a policy on bullying and harassment, House Bill 2599 lays out a set of minimum standards required to be included in that policy. The policy must make it clear that it covers behavior at school-sponsored activities or on school-provided transportation. The policy must identify a point person at each school to whom students, parents, and teachers can report incidents of harassment. And it requires a uniform process across districts for complaints. And while existing statute does not address posting requirements for the policy, House Bill 2599 requires that the policy be made available to the public so the school community can be actively engaged in helping to prevent and address instances of bullying and harassment. Finally, House Bill 2599 addresses further training for teachers to prevent and address bullying. And I know that you won't be having a work session today, but did want to just quickly touch base on the Dash 1 amendments, which is what the coalition is supporting. In Section 1 with the Dash 1s, we're clarifying that the new standard, like the old one, covers all bullying activity and is not limited to class status, though we are further defining bullying to include action based on status as well. In Section 2, we're eliminating Sub L, which would have noticed discrimination issues pursuant to ORS Chapter 659A. And since we already have ORS 659A, we think it's redundant to include that again here in this statute. In Section 2, Sub 3, we're deleting the reporting requirements. And, of course, we would love to have more information on the extent and causes of bullying in our state. We understand right now that the current economic climate and fiscal crisis prevent us from putting additional reporting requirements on schools. And finally, in Section 3, we address training and for teachers. And again here, understanding the current fiscal climate, we are modifying the training provision to be permissive rather than mandatory. We have worked extensively with members of the education lobby on these amendments, and I believe it will be accurate. I believe you'll hear today that we can characterize those other members of the education lobby as either neutral or in support of the bill with these Dash 1 amendments. And again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chair Gessler, members of the House Committee on Education, my name is Rachel Cushman. I am here today to testify in support of improving anti-bullying laws in Oregon. I'm a student at the University of Oregon. I'm 22 years old, and I'm a Chinook native. I would like to tell you two stories today. One is my own, and one is my brother's. We grew up going to public schools in Oregon. Beginning in elementary school, we experienced constant bullying and harassment based on identity and beliefs we were raised with as Chinook Native. It would start with name-calling. Kids would call us savages. We were told that we were both stupid and that our people had been conquered. I was even called a heathen. This time was very difficult for me, and it affected my educational experience. It was even harder for my brother. He has severe dyslexia and a disability. He was harassed as a kid and picked on constantly. This often escalated to physical harassment. While he was suffering, the teachers would say, "That's just how kids are." He experienced ongoing bullying and intimidation. As a result, he moved schools several numbers of times, even more than I did. This constant barrage of harassment takes a toll. Quickly, my grades began to decline. The way I was treated by my classmates left me disengaged. It was even worse for my brother. The bullying and intimidation and harassment made it impossible for him to succeed in school. He always wanted to go home early. Many mornings, my brother told my mom that he didn't feel like going at all. When he went to school, he'd only often make it through only a couple of hours before calling my mom saying that he wanted to go home. In middle school, I was lucky enough to meet a Native American recruiter from the University of Oregon. She gave me support and hope that I could represent my community and succeed in school, despite my experiences thus far. I was motivated by this unprecedented support, and became determined to succeed and go to college. I graduated and enrolled in the University of Oregon in 2005. It was difficult, but I'm one of the few success stories. My brother, however, is not. It became a downward spiral for my brother. He would get harassed, then he would react or defend himself or hide and seek refuge. After one incident on the playground, he climbed all the way up on top of the school roof to hide. This happened continually. He found himself being bullied and responding to the bullying, which in turn got him in trouble. Eventually, this culture of harassment extended beyond the school walls, where he was physically assaulted off school grounds by students who attended elementary school with him. He was severely hurt. This was a defining moment for my brother. He no longer had lots of friends. He became very reserved, and it became very difficult for him to trust people. My brother graduated high school but did not continue on to college. His experiences being bullied and harassed have had severe long-term impacts on his life. This all could have been prevented if school had strong anti-bullying policy, if there had been a point person at this school to assign to deal with the issue, and if it were clear that harassment based on the fact that we're Native people and because my brother had a disability, things might have turned out differently. Please support HB 2599 and strengthening school policies addressing bullying. Thank you.
Thank you. Morgan.
Thank you, Chair Gelsner, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education, and I'm here on behalf of the department and Superintendent Castillo in support of House Bill 2599. I'll keep my remarks very brief. I just wanted to sort of reiterate what Dana had said about the Dash 1 amendments. I think they represent a good compromise for both the department and the school district, and in difficult economic times, there's really no burden on the department and very little revision of bullying policies that school districts will have to go to. So we've actually turned in our fiscal to the Legislative Fiscal Office as a minimal, able to absorb the work at the agency. This legislative body has had good foresight. Districts are already required to have a bullying policy. It's in the Division 22 Oregon Administrative Rules. We've added cyberbullying as time goes on, sort of updating it to the times. And I think House Bill 2599 sort of represents the next step or the next iteration of strengthening these policies to protect all students in our schools. It really gives clear direction and offers a set of minimum standards to our school districts that they have to have. We have much of the language in the bill is already in statute, but is, for lack of a better term, it's suggested language. It gives a lot more latitude to school districts. So essentially we are saying, you know, what you may do is what you now have to do. It basically changes a lot of mays to shalls, and that will really help give some clear direction to our school districts as they outline these policies. So with that, I will conclude and be available for questions. Thank you.
And Morgan, I heard some information the other day that of the 200 school districts, about 70 school districts right now have bullying policies available. Is that accurate? And does that mean that there are about 130 that do not have bullying policies that are easily available to the public?
Chair Gelser, I would have to check on that. I don't know that, but I can look into that for you.
Thank you.
And get you an answer, I guess, when it comes back on Wednesday or at another time. So.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Maurer.
Madam Chair, I'll keep it short. I know we have a lot of people to testify. So, do school districts or are school districts prohibited from employing these policies today under current statute?
Chair Gelser and Representative Maurer, no, I do not believe so.
Chair Gelser, Representative Maurer, all this does is set kind of a floor for what must be included in a policy. And so we're saying, you know, this is the minimum standard. This is what you must do. Some districts are going to and have already chosen to go above and beyond, but we know that there are some districts that may not be meeting the floor right now. So we're saying this is kind of the minimum standard of what it takes to be effective at addressing bullying.
Madam Chair, so what are the consequences? I mean, this young lady's story, to me, the ORS has prohibited that kind of behavior today. We didn't have to change the law to address really her situation. So what are the consequences for these districts that just flat out fail to meet even a common sense standard?
That's a great question. I don't have a good answer for the consequences. I think we can come back to you on that. What I would say is that this, there may be, a district may have a bullying policy in place that actually isn't helping to address the stories that you're hearing about, because the parents or the students don't know who the point person is that they need to go to, or the district hasn't assigned a point person to deal with complaints that are coming in. So the types of things that we're calling out here as required are exactly the type of things that districts absolutely need to do to begin to become effective.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
if it's all right, Chair Gelser and Representative Maurer, we could get you some statistics. Frankly, when I've looked at this, it is staggering the number of students that get expelled and suspended in our schools every year. I mean, the districts are doing a lot already to make sure these behaviors don't happen, but they're very persistent. The research is very clear about children getting picked on once they're identified in their peer groups and the continuing harassment and intimidation, and you maybe get rid of one bully and another one pops up because that student's already been identified as someone that we can pick on and do terrible things to. But again, I would just reiterate, we're studying the floor right now. We have a policy that basically says districts have to have some sort of policy, and it gives very little guidance. It makes many suggestions that are included in this legislation, and again, it sort of sets up a minimum standard. It sets up a floor so that wherever you go to school in Oregon, so if you move from a district that has a great bullying policy, you can expect a minimum level of protection and a minimum level of district personnel available to contact as a parent or a student if you have problems. So that is a big change, and that's a big step forward, and that's, I think, what we're trying to do with the bill.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Maurer?
Madam Chair, I find without a consequence, what's to say that this isn't going to continue? It's not the kids are kids to a point, and they're going to do something one time. You tell them no, they should stop. But if there's a pattern of behavior that's going on and on and on, at some point, somebody's got to say, district, you need to figure this out, or there's going to be consequence to you or your school district. So I'll stop, ma'am. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dana, you made the comment that this was a floor and many districts were doing above and beyond what this bill suggests. Can you give me some of the examples, not so much the district, but what it is they're doing that's above and beyond this bill?
No, I don't have example policies to share with you today, but we could certainly give you examples of policies. I know that you're going to see the Oregon School Board Association model policy today, and it already includes a number of things in this law, but we know that, this says that is the policy you must adopt. It's not a suggestion. There are some things in there that you absolutely need to have in your local policy to make sure that you're meeting the minimum requirements of the new law.
Hold on. Do you know the districts that have gone above and beyond that you referenced?
Not off the top of my head.
Thank you, Representative Springer. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to. One of the issues that I think is a glaring issue for all of us is what are we doing with the perpetrator and what services are available to help us deal with the perpetrator, because I agree with the law and I agree with strengthening the law, but the reality that we have, I think, is a huge shortage of services for schools in serving the needs of kids who are having trouble. And so, it goes back to who's modeling what's going on with the perpetrator, because I'm sure there are some serious issues going on there as well. So, again, it just points out how sorely we need additional services to help school districts with kids who are having troubles.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of the important parts of the bill is the requirement that districts provide annual reports to the department. And I think that's useful just because it keeps everyone on schedule. But also, potentially, the department would then have the information and could look at it. Do you have any sense of what the plans are for the department to do with the annual reports, other than to make sure that districts have sent them in and have some kind of plan in place?
Chair Gelser and Representative Dimbrough, I'd have to look at specific lines you're talking about, but I believe the Dash 1 amendments delete those reporting requirements to the department. They do create
an encouragement to do so.
A modest fiscal for the agency, yep. But I think that the Safe Schools Coalition heard from a lot of school districts that given sort of the current economic situation, that that may be a step we need to take on down, later down the line. Our school districts are going to be struggling to keep their doors open, let alone having another reporting requirement. So, again, that may be a two-step process later down the line.
Thank you.
Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have received the Dash One amendments and hadn't seen them before, but I'd received an email from a constituent over the weekend who was monitoring this, who went through bullying as a kid and was very much in favor of the goal and the intent of the bill, but was also suggesting that a bunch of the reporting language be removed. So I need to go over in detail what is in Dash One and what he has proposed. He also threw in an idea which I think is worthy of consideration, which was that there be some conversation with, in his words, this is in section 2.1, where it's school districts are encouraged to develop policy after consultation with, et cetera, et cetera. He includes, and staff from the Ed Department of an accredited university. And I wonder if anyone has had that in their thinking on this process or not, if they could comment on it. It seemed to me to have merit.
We don't all have it.
It's pointed out that not everyone would have access to someone from a university, and that's a very good point.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That's what it is, rural people.
So was that considered by the coalition or discussed?
Sorry, I'm thumbing through the page. Chair Gilster and Representative Parker, I don't know the answer to that question. I could consult with our friends at the Safe Schools Coalition and see if we can get back to you.
It may well follow
up.
Thank you.
You're
it
welcome.
May well be that it's a good idea, but really impractical in many situations. So, but come on, we can see.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we're going to be hearing a lot of testimony, and I would just encourage people that are testifying, a number of us, me included, could give very graphic testimony about being bullied in middle school or whatever. Mm-hmm. I would prefer testimony to, because I talked to Rebecca the other day, I don't know if she's going to be one to testify about examples of school districts that actually have policy with teeth in it that are working and protecting kids. Because I got to tell you, as I read down through this, my first question was, where are the teeth? Mm. Where's the change going to be? How are the kids going to be protected from this? I don't see it. And like I say, I've got my own story. I'll share it with you sometime. But if our goal is truly to make kids safer, I think we need to really work toward that. And if people today have testimony on examples where they're doing that, I think we need to adopt those.
Thank you, Representative. So I think that's an encouragement and a hint on how to frame your testimony when you're coming up. Are there any further questions for this panel of witnesses? No. No, thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
And I apologize. I didn't mean to shut anybody down that has their stories, because those are powerful too, and they're out there every day. And I know there are a lot of hurting young people out there, so I don't mean to shut people down with my comments, but I would really like to get to a solution on this bill.
Thank you, Representative. And I think I heard you asking how to put it in context of how we can use this to help kids. And I think that message from you was very clear. Our next panel is Joyce Lilleholm, Zach Martinson, and Gina Frazzini.
No, you were right. I have one here. Thanks. Okay.
Welcome. Thanks for coming today. And whichever of you wishes to start first is fine with me.
Okay. Chair Gelzer and members of the committee, my name is Joyce Lilleholm. I'm a school counselor retired after 32 years of service in public schools. I've been an adjunct professor at Lewis and Clark College, and I'm an active volunteer with the Coalition Against Hate Crimes, the Healthy Kids Learn Better Coalition, PFLAG, Parents, Family, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. I'm the parish visitor in my faith community, and I'm a wife and mother. All of these roles have led me to co-found Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition, working for a safe and supportive school environment for each and every student. We are pleased to be working with the Safe Schools for All Youth Coalition this session to support House Bill 2599. Bullying, harassment, and intimidation can be a very serious problem. During my career, I sometimes worked in schools with clear, well-enforced policies, and sometimes in schools with minimal, poorly enforced policies. In those latter situations, my students suffered terribly before any relief was provided. A young man perceived to be gay was receiving death threats. A young Asian woman was so distraught from the harassment she was enduring that she wanted plastic surgery to change the shape of her eyes. As unfortunate as these situations were, I was concerned about the bullies as well. One very bright young man was needlessly expelled from school because his escalating behaviors were not effectively addressed early on. Strengthening Oregon's anti-bullying policies will help lead to early intervention, which is the key to success for both those that bully and those who are bullied. Upon retirement, I began volunteering with Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition. I met fair-minded school staff from across the state, deeply troubled by needy students, limited resources, struggling parents, and overwhelmed staff. We provided programs for establishing a safe school environment for sexual minority youth, which in turn helped make schools safer for all students. Wonderful things have been happening around the state. You will hear some courageous youth tell their stories. I'm here to affirm them and speak for others who still cannot safely talk with you. So many people are saying enough to harassment. Too many youth have suffered permanent harm for verbal and physical attacks. Too many students have become depressed and some even suicidal. We want all of Oregon's youth to be safe. On a personal note, my sons never told me they were bullied. In elementary school, a parent volunteer called me to alert me to what she had observed. I knew there were policies in place, but my son did not. So I taught him how to access help from his school. At middle school, a school bus driver who attends my church reported that my other son was suffering daily abusive verbal harassment. Relief was available, but he had no idea how to access it. House Bill 2599 insists on clear publicity of the anti-bullying policies to students as well as the entire school community. Fortunately, my sons continued on to academic success. As many youth will tell you, they have not been as fortunate. Oregon needs House Bill 2599 to ensure both the physical and emotional safety of our youth. Then they will be free to pursue their education and contribute to our community. Thank you for hearing my testimony. I urge you to pass House Bill 259.
Thank you.
2599.
Please.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Zach Martinson, and I thank you very much for hearing my testimony today. I'm a senior at Portland State University, currently serving as the Director of State Affairs at our Associated Student Government, as well as the Vice Chair of the Board of Directors of the Oregon Student Association, and I'm here today to speak in support for the Safe Schools for All Kids Act, House Bill 2599. I grew up in Oregon and have attended Oregon public schools since the second grade upon my moving here from Alaska. I've always stood out from my peers because of my size, and frankly, I'm a big guy. When I was young, I was even bigger for my age because I shot up a lot faster than most of the regular kids at school. Being bullied and harassed was a constant reality for me throughout elementary school, middle school, and high school. Elementary school, for me personally, was the worst. In elementary school, I was constantly harassed and singled out. Other students would taunt me for weeks on end. This kind of intimidation that was ongoing was endless, and I honestly was wondering if it was ever going to end. There are a couple of experiences that stick out in my mind to this day. One was, it was either in the third or fourth grade. Honestly, my childhood memories escape me sometimes. I was surrounded by about 20 kids. Just a visual representation. I counted the amount of people in this hearing room, and that's about the amount of people on this half. If you can imagine being a third grade kid and being surrounded by this many people, it's a pretty horrifying thing. They surrounded me, and they were calling me Jabba the Hutt, a famous character from Star Wars. Honestly, I was a Star Wars nerd, and because of my size, they felt it was an appropriate gesture. This hurt a lot, and it got to the point where after I finally ran away from these kids, another student approached me maybe 15 minutes later and called me the same name behind my back, and I turned around and I punched him, because honestly, at that point, at that age, that seemed to be the only thing, the only resource, the only tool I had to prevent further abuse towards myself. That kid sadly ended up in the hospital because I was so frustrated. And beyond that, I was suspended and labeled the bully because obviously to my school district, physical abuse was the only form of bullying, and for some reason they didn't monitor verbal abuse. On another occasion, a group of students lured me into a trap. I'm sure a lot of people know tire trees. They're these giant posts that stick out of the ground and they put tires on them. What the students would do was they would have a couple kids climb the tire tree and then they would have another student come and taunt me, get me to the point where I would chase them out of frustration. They'd run me right through the tire trees and then they'd jump on me, causing me to go into the ground. And they say the bigger you are, the harder you fall. Well, I would fall right into the bark dust and get bark chips in my knees and I would get cut up and bloodied. And it was a very disturbing circumstance, which to this day I have scars on my knees and it hurts. Mentally it really is frustrating. The bullying honestly took a toll on me. After repeated harassment, I became too afraid to go to school. I began begging my mom to prevent me from going to school and asking her to homeschool me. Sometimes I would outright refuse to go. There was a long-term, for me, psychological impact. To this day, there are trigger words that if you call me something, honestly, I will flip. One of them is stupid. I grew up being called stupid, and my intelligence was questioned constantly. Obviously, today, that is no longer a problem, but some of these words have deeply, deeply impacted me. Beyond that, I was diagnosed with severe depression and put on Prozac. This only numbed me further and separated me from my student body, preventing me the kind of help I needed. After becoming disconnected from my school, I honestly mentally peaced out. I began having my grades slip, and it really suffered me. I really suffered for having gone through these experiences. So, Representative Huffman asked how this bill would directly have impacted my personal experience. What it would do is it would set that institutionalized point person at every school so that I would have known as a student who I could have approached and who I could have gone to for the resources needed in order for me to prevent this bullying from happening. Honestly, I suffered about 10 years of physical and verbal harassment, and I believe full-heartedly that this legislation could have narrowed it down to one or two until I had actually pinpointed the resources and the tools I needed to prevent this kind of harassment. So I am here today to support House Bill 2599, and I thank you very much for hearing my testimony today.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify before you today on this important issue. My name is Gina Frazzini, and I'm the Executive Director of Basic Rights Oregon. We're the statewide advocacy organization for the gay, transgender, and allied community, and we represent tens of thousands of Oregonians across this state from every corner. 2 years ago, thanks to the leadership of the Oregon legislature, our state became a more equal place to live and work with the passage of the Oregon Equality Act and the Oregon Family Fairness Act. These laws demonstrate that we're slowly but surely finding our way to a more compassionate and equitable future. And HB 2599 represents a critical next step on that road to equality and fairness. In my travels around the state, I've heard from parents, from school teachers, faculty, and from youth about the problem of bullying, harassment, and intimidation in our schools. I've sat with children as young as 9 years old who've shared their pain and their humiliation in the hopes that they could help you all understand the change that needs to happen. And there's certainly enough statistics out there that I've seen. The National Crime Prevention Council, for example, reports that 6 out of 10 American teens witness bullying at least once a day. Bullying affects all of our youth, and we know that bullies go after kids that are different. Kids who are or are perceived to be gay or transgender, and children of gay or transgender parents are often singled out for abuse. In fact, the climate that exists in our schools, where youth are surrounded by expressions like "that's so gay" or "you're so gay," meaning stupid or worthless, and derogatory remarks like "faggot" and "dyke," these take a toll on LGBT youth, who are more likely to drop out of school, engage in substance abuse, or attempt suicide. And moreover, the National Mental Health Association reports that for every gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender student who reports being harassed, 4 straight students say they're harassed for being perceived as gay. This type of harassment has become all too common in our own schools. Nationally, school climate surveys indicate that nearly 90% of students report hearing these remarks frequently or often in school. And we know that it doesn't have to be this way. These same surveys have found that students from a school with a safe school policy that includes protection based on sexual orientation and gender identity heard fewer homophobic remarks, experienced lower levels of victimization related to their orientation, were more likely to report that staff had intervened when hearing homophobic remarks, and were more likely to report incidents of harassment and assault to school staff. And I want to refer to some written testimony that has been submitted today to get to this question of how does this legislation really have an opportunity to change the climate? What are some success stories? You will find in front of you, I believe at this point, a letter submitted by Bruce Stiller, the Positive Behavior Support Coordinator in the 4J School District in Eugene Public Schools. Bruce remarks that here in this letter, most 4J elementary and middle schools have adopted bully prevention programs such as Steps to Respect, Bully Prevention in Positive Behavior Support, or Use Another Word. And by implementing these programs, we are able to reduce the frequency and intensity of these damaging behaviors. So we're seeing success here in Oregon, and with House Bill 2599, we can see more of that. This bill addresses a serious problem, improves and clarifies existing law, ensures that every school in every district in this state can create a safe environment for all students, and to give teachers and faculty more tools in the toolbox to set clear expectations and hold students accountable. I think what we know, we do know that clearly communicated standards combined with set procedures for dealing with problems as they arise and a designated point person for each school community ensures early intervention, and this is critical. Basic Rights Oregon is proud to be part of the Coalition for Safe Schools. The breadth of this coalition certainly represents how widespread the concern about bullying in our schools has become. And again, I want to thank you for your time and encourage you to support House Bill 2599. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Was it Gianna?
Gina.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
In Bruce Stiller's letter, Steps to Respect, Bully Prevention, and the programs that he outlined here, are those readily available to school districts? Do you think school districts know about these?
Sure.
I'm familiar working throughout the state, and the first two, the Steps to Success, are commercially available programs, and they use another word, was actually created by students, and it's fabulous, but it is locally created.
Okay, follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Do you know if, and since Morgan's not up here, I'll have to have you interface for him, do you know if these are programs that ODE is telling school districts are available and they work? And
I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you. I am seeing a nod of the head, yes. So
lost him in the... Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. For any of you, I was looking at the letter from Bruce Stiller, and it says that at the very bottom, it says it's only a first step, but it is past time we take that step. I'm wondering what other things... I know this is his letter, but I'm wondering if there are other things that you would wish were included in the bill, and what other steps would you advocate?
Well, I can speak to that. Chair Gelser and Representative Thatcher. I think that in terms of the first step, that what we have seen, and I hope that the statistic that Representative Gelser mentioned earlier about the 70 out of 200 school districts, I believe that's information from the Oregon School Board Association. I believe we'll hear from them later, but I do know that in our own research from Basic Rights Oregon's perspective, in gathering information from the 198 school districts about publicly available posted bullying information, bullying policy information, that it was very difficult to find what's out there. In fact, I believe we only found one-third of school districts making their policies publicly available. And so this first step in terms of creating a floor for every school district in the state to meet in terms of making the policy available publicly, having a point person, these kinds of standards are really critical, and that there are some things with the economic climate that we won't see in the bill this year, which would point to future steps in terms of the statutes, but that it's really about each of the school districts going through their own process to adopt a policy with these, you know, with these minimum standards, and developing for their community how to best incorporate the standards into their district.
Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question for Joyce. You know, in your testimony, you gave us the example of the young man who's, you use the term escalating behaviors, you know, ultimately led him to physical violence and then to have it to being expelled. So this notion of escalating behaviors, that's a big part of this, is it not? That is, you know, this bill is designed particularly to nip this kind of thing early on, to stop it early on. And is that a trend that you saw in your professional practice, that these kinds of things tend to escalate, and then more students get involved and you end up in the kind of situation Zach was in, where it's a whole kind of mob of students ganging up on someone?
Chair Gelser and Representative Dimbrough, yes, I would say that's the case. What I feel this bill would do, if I were still employed in the school district as a counselor, if I had one employee, one administrator who wasn't responding in the fashion I had hoped for, knowing this law and having the policies in place, I would be in a better position as a fellow employee to say, hey, let's remember, these are the policies we have. That's why we must do these educational consequences to teach this young man so he can be productive. I didn't have that tool at my disposal as an employee. When I've done workshops in schools at the request of administration, I've found the administration welcomed it. The staff welcomed it. They wanted to have a framework and tools to work with.
Any further questions for this panel? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Years ago in our Head Start program, we introduced violence prevention programs with Children's Home Society, which we then trained Hood River School District staff people. And then Hood River started doing Challenge Day, and then Wasco County schools have picked it up. Is that something that the schools can use to address some of the issues that we're talking about? Do you know anything? Are you familiar with either program, and are they successful in what you know? Do you know anything about them?
Chair Gelser and Representative Van Orman, I'm not familiar with those specific programs. One of the things that I understand educators like about this bill is it does not prescribe which programs or every little detail of how they address the needs of their unique district, but it does have this basic floor of you will have steps that a victim can pursue, you will have steps to follow with a perpetrator, and that you will have a point person. And then it's to the discretion of each district what shape that takes to meet the needs of their community.
Follow up. So then one of the amendments is encouraged to incorporate into existing training programs. So,
Chair Gelser and Representative Van Orman, what I would say with the fiscal compromises we have to make due to the economic climate, I recall as a staff person a very clear instruction at the start of the year that child abuse reporting works like this and you will do it. That set a tone in the building that didn't cost any money, but I knew crystal clear what was expected of me. Personally, short and sweet, that's what I see with this bill, that it will set short and sweet, crystal clear, some things that need to happen in the climate of every building, and then there are details for each school to fill in.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any further questions for this panel? No, seeing them, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next panel is Roger Weaver, Esther Griffin, and Chris Allman, please.
Chair.
Yes.
While we're in transition, can I share an observation?
Of course.
Well, I'm a fanatic about looking up school board policy, and looking at Dr. Stiller's testimony, Eugene School District has an incredible board policy on intimidation, bullying, harassment, discrimination, hazing, and retaliation. They first started that in 1998, updated it in 03, and then again in 07. What a testimony that school boards and districts do care about this issue, to the fact that they're putting that kind of attention to their policies. So it's a really great example.
Thank you. It sounds like kudos are in order to the Eugene School District.
If they do what they say in this policy.
Yes. That's right.
The devil.
Right, thank you. And I understand that Mr. Weaver has a friend waiting for him in the car, so I'm going to let you go
four-legged
first.
Friend. Thank you very much, Chairman Gelser. I am here to ask that you consider, no matter how many requirements to meet the law minimally, is set by the legislature, unless a deadline is given for the implementation of these wonderful policies, these minimal policies. The school districts probably won't implement them unless a deadline is given. Let's be realistic about the way schools work. No deadline date for implementation, you put it off. And so that's what I'm asking, is that whatever you end up with, it has a deadline date. I'm also, the committee assistant is handing around lists of programs which are helpful. I need to include more after five, but I'm with Rainbow Health Resources, which is a Benton County nonprofit that works for safety in the schools for children. And this is obviously one of our big things. And in answer to Representative Harker's question, I think Representative Huffman as well, there is a local program called Number 2 Boomerang, in what I just sent around with the Rainbow Health. So some of these programs are free to legislators, for instance, I mean to educators. Stop the Bullying should be on your list. I notice it didn't get on some of the lists. I don't know why it didn't copy lists 6, 7, and 8. But at the bottom of the first page, it says substance abuse and mental health services. This is these federal programs are available. The Southern Poverty Law Center, headed by Morris Dees, gives out free anti-bullying programs. Teaching Tolerance gives materials free to teachers and administrators. So I will fall silent now because... But I want you to know that here are some varying costs and programs available to schools that are individual.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Now, can you wait until the panel finishes in case we have questions? Will you be okay for just a couple more minutes?
Well, I don't know how. They have important things that take time, and my only point was about the date, and that here are some free things.
All right.
So I've left my Greyhound long enough, and I should have lowered more windows, but
right.
I'm very worried about, I don't want to come back to a car and find a dead dog.
All right, well, I will let you get to your dog. Unfortunately, we don't let them come into the Capitol anymore.
Well,
but
thank you
so much for coming.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, good afternoon, and thank you for hearing us today. My name is Esther Griffin. I'm the Vice Chair of Beaverton's Human Rights Advisory Commission, an advisory board member of Glisten Oregon, that's the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, and a former 11-year employee of the Beaverton School District, most recently at Southridge High School. I say former employee of Beaverton Schools because while working at Southridge High School, I saw and heard gay and lesbian students and those who were simply perceived to be harassed on a daily basis, and I spoke up. I intervened when I caught it. I called it to the administration's attention, and I put up affirming posters in my office. But it was not okay to support our marginalized youth so openly and avidly. I lost my job, the job I was doing beautifully. I was told I was not a good fit for the school. Let me tell you why I had to speak up, why I could not ignore what I saw and heard. I, too, was a bullied student. I was called names every day in the hallways. My locker was written on. Kids I did not even know followed me home from school, throwing rocks and calling names from across the street. The custodian, who grew tired of cleaning my locker, put me up against it one afternoon and told me I'd invited the vandalism, that I deserved it, and that I didn't belong on the face of this earth. The principal told my mother I should find a different route home from school. Not one person in my school stood up for me. Not one adult I expected to help ever came through for me. I was depressed and wanted to be dead more than anything in the world because I was being attacked daily for absolutely nothing I had done wrong. I spent hours standing on the bridge over the highway, wishing I had the courage to jump. I hear this from our students now, too, more than 30 years later. I understand, and it makes me sick. I obviously didn't jump off the bridge at age 16, but only because I was too afraid of the pain when I landed far below. I stayed on the bridge and in this world, but suffered a different and unnecessary pain all those years. Over time, I lost the confidence and self-worth I had as a younger child. Despite my intelligence and college degrees and great husband and 2 children, I am an adult with fears, sadness, and anxieties that were created through years of constant bullying. I cannot look the other way. I cannot let another generation of wonderful kids become so beaten down and think so poorly of themselves for nothing they have done wrong. These are some of our best and brightest, some of our most creative and compassionate children. We must protect them in every way we can. We must stand up for a physically and emotionally safe and secure learning environment for all students. Please pass the Oregon Safe Schools Act. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chris.
Chair Gelser and members of the House Education Committee, thank you. I'm testifying in behalf of and support of House Bill 2599. I'm a physician and a mother of children who have attended the Beaverton School District, schools in the Beaverton School District. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me. Many consider bullying a rite of passage, just normal maturation. But the middle school years begin a slippery slope. Kids' achievement declines. They're disciplined more. The latter feeds the former. And the frequent interloper is the bully whose words can cut into the kids' souls and create deep and unknown scars that never heal.
Chris, I'm sorry to interrupt, but can you say your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Chris Ullman, sorry. Middle school kids tend to either run in packs or become lone wolves. Our son, a new eighth grader at his middle school, was a cub looking for a pack. It's hard for a stray cub to get adopted into a pack. In November, our son's school called to tell us he was to be suspended because another boy reported that our son had threatened him. "I'm going to kill you," he said. This boy, we later found out, had been tormenting him, calling him fag, gay, queer, weird. He had also just been suspended when a teacher overheard him telling my son that he was going to break his arm. We found out that many kids had been teasing him, and the school was aware of at least one instance, but we were not informed. That's why school activities, working on group projects, riding the bus, passing through the hallways, eating lunch, and hanging out at recess were stressful for my son. That's why he didn't like school. He stored his isolation and frustration into negative energy just as spark was necessary for him to explode. The victim became the aggressor. Around that time, his health curriculum included, "Should you ever be a snitch?" homework. But when my son later snitched to the teacher that some fellow students were calling him fag and they were sent to the hallway, he knew he could never snitch again. He became less motivated and more disrespectful in his class. His second suspension just last week was a consequence of his growing dislike for the class and the teacher, the primary evidence, F words, scrawled on his classroom notebook. F is also for failing to create a safe school where kids treat each other well. Our school district has implemented positive behavior and support strategies. The district's program goal is to reduce loss of instructional time and therefore increase learning time. Yet according to district statistics, my son's school exceeds all other middle schools for suspensions in the Beaverton School District, with one in four of the kids being suspended in the past couple of years. And only 30% of these kids, when surveyed last spring, strongly agree that they, quote, treat each other well no matter what race, language, or how rich or poor someone is. In loco parentis doctrine permits our schools broad discretion to act in the best interest of children. If codes 26, threats, menacing, hate lists, and 4, bullying, harassment of our district's consistent discipline handbook aren't enforced for homophobic behavior, how should principal's code be "not so smart, I'm going to kill you" come back from the kid who has no resources to feel safe? According to our district's administrative rules, unless an emergency situation exists relating to health or safety, the student shall receive prior notice of the suspension, specification of charges, reasons for the disciplinary action, length of suspension, and an opportunity to present his or her view of the alleged misconduct. Parents may request a conference with the principal. There is no appeal process beyond the school principal. Zero tolerance cannot be effective when inconsistent disciplinary consequences are apparent to both the child and the parent. While principals must have the discretion to suspend children who threaten safety or disrupt the classroom, parents should be able to review a school's actions to ensure that bullying behaviors are addressed. When unsafe conditions and smoldering behavioral issues have not been brought to parents' attention and when no emergency situation exists, parents should be privy to all charges and evidence and should be able to appeal beyond the judge and jury.
And well, Chris, I'm going to have to ask you to start summing up because we've got many, many, many more panels
okay.
that are coming.
Well, in summing up, and I just was about done, I just wanted to point out that we can prescribe all these things and create, ask for statistics, but Beaverton's already doing that. It's not making a difference for my son. And part of the reason why we're in this situation is that we aren't helping the kids identify homophobic and other antisocial behaviors and understand the harm. And that's partly because we live in this society, this society that we're marginalized and belittled to, and we're thwarted when we speak out against oppression. So it's been brought up that there are free resources, and I have listed some as well. The education.com website, bullying is a group phenomenon. It takes two, rethinking the aggressor-victim relationship. There's these free resources. There's an excellent handout that talks about how does homophobia hurt us all. We have the resources available. It's just important that our educators take the time to discuss them, to think about them, and to have consistent guidelines where we as parents can appeal punishments that create this victim-aggressor cycle. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And before I ask for questions, just to let you know, we have 7 more panels to hear. Are there any questions for this panel?
Ian Huffman. Put it right down.
We have our own.
Each other down.
We have our own caucus. All right. Thank you very much. So next, I'm going to call Laura Starr-Massaris and Mike Levin. And I'm going to let Laura go first because I understand that there is a doctor waiting.
I don't have a dog or a doctor. More
than a greyhound for you.
Good morning. Thank you, Representative Gelser and Committee, Education Committee. I have a brief testimony to share with you. Our story is much longer than, and it could fill pages, and you're welcome to call me. I'll leave contact information. I'll start briefly. My daughter, Star, she's a gifted 11-year-old and native Oregonian. She suffers with anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder from bullying attacks at her former neighborhood public school. Despite my continuing complaints and best efforts to proactively work on safety plans with her school district, my daughter, who is so compliant, did not receive adequate priority for intervention. She and several female classmates were grabbed by the arm, pulled, forced, kissed by boys on the playground with supervision, teased and harassed in the cafeteria and classroom. One boy even threatened to bring a gun to school and shoot her and her two best friends on the school bus. She was coming home with bruises. She was reporting them to her teacher. They were not making it to the principal. One boy threatened to bring a gun to school and shoot her and her friends. He said, "If the police come, I will just shoot them too." In the most recent attack, the traumas and injuries were so severe that her doctor ordered me to remove her to another school. I never thought in a million years a doctor would be telling me that I had to do that. It was a shock. The older group of boys refused to let Star take her seat on the back of the school bus. She asked why not, and they said, "Fine, have it your way." And they punched her in the head. They pulled her hair. They dragged her by her backpack, injuring her neck. She requires ongoing medication and special support and therapy to recover from the trauma inflicted on her by the bullies at her school. I think it's important with this bill that I notice that it's adding the coverage to be sure to cover the school bus stops as well as the school bus. I did a research paper in college about the impact of school bus monitors and other potential interventions that I feel would be really helpful. I did everything as a parent I could to communicate with the school proactively. I wrote a 10-page incident response evaluation, what they did right, what didn't work so well. I've joined an organization, Oregon Family Support Network. We have a page on bullying with over 80 links with lots of statistics, information, et cetera. I'm definitely in support of this bill. Reporting is important. The first thing the principal said when he called me the next morning after the school bus gun threat incident, and he goes, "Oh my gosh, now I'm going to have to report this, and now that means our home values are going to go down." It was a very shocking response, but When I tried to look further, it didn't look like it did actually get reported. And so I think reporting is important for the reasons mentioned. And unfortunately, yes, it does cost money, but I think in the long run, it's a worthy investment. So there's lots of important details. And finally, what works well. We've relocated. My daughter's going to a different school. We noticed when we first walked in, there's posters in the hall. If you're a bully, if you're being bullied, students' bill of rights right over the front door. Hands are not for hurting. And she felt safe there. And she reported to me after a year of going there, she saw no physical bullying. They're doing something right. And so thank you very much.
Thank you. And Star, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Mm-hmm. Very sorry. Thanks.
Chair Gelser? Gelser? It looks like the S should come first.
Gelser runs it after Gelser.
Sorry. Representative. It turns out I got lucky. You can tell I was here on a different agenda today, but this is also a subject that's pretty passionate in my household. Couple real simple thoughts on hearing the components of this. One of the things that I found disturbing, I'll share the details on another day, but my son had a bullying incident, and it only became aware to us when a third party brought it to our attention. Out of fear of repercussion, he was not going to report it himself. So we found out about it. We made the claim to the principal of our local school, school within the Tiger Tualatin School District, and addressed it directly with the principal by way of some phone messages. And came to find, after following up with the principal and asking what sort of course of action was taken, to find that she had handled it on her own. And when we asked if the parents of the bullying child had been notified, the answer was, no, we took care of it here ourselves directly in the school. One of the things I would like to see is something in this measure that requires a notification. If my son was on the other end of this, I'd want to know. I'd want to be proactive in stopping the bullying if my son was the offender in that matter. The other point that I've heard today, and also one of the things that came out of that, also talked to the district, and it seemed like there's a lot of latitude from school to school within the district. I don't know other districts. I only know Tiger Tualatin. But that would be something I think that we were looking for. Like Representative Huffman, you said some teeth in this. Some teeth would be some consistency from school to school, district to district, and you know, I think that's imperative. The other part that I've heard today is I do understand where we're at financially in the state and understand the impact of budgets. While we need to take the reporting off the table, per se, for the time being, I'd like to see a gate in the measure that says when it gets back to X, and maybe X could be the general funding levels of 2007, that we put that reporting back in, because the only way we're going to have an effective tool to be able to see is this measure achieving its goal is if we have accurate reporting to know that the numbers are going down, they're going up, they're staying the same, and how do we address it. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? No, thank you very much for coming today. Our next panel is Bonnie Tinker, Paige Stoudemeyer, and Michael Tebb. Welcome. Thanks for coming. Please, and if you start your testimony with your name, then we'll have it all for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Bonnie Tinker. I am the director of Love Makes a Family, Inc. I'm happy to support HB 2599 as another advance in our efforts to interrupt bullying in our schools. The experiences I bring to you are both as a parent of three, a grandparent of three, and as a professional supporting lesbian, gay, bi, and trans families as the director of Love Makes a Family, Inc. All three of our own children, now they are 41, 38, and 25, suffered bullying in school because their mothers, my partner and I, are lesbians. The conditions they lived through still exist today in schools across Oregon. Our oldest son, in a lesbian-headed family from age 10, never told us about the teasing he endured while he was in school. Nobody discussed sexual orientation, much less their mother's sexual orientation, in school in those days. When he was in his early 20s, he finally confided in us that he had been seriously teased, a form of bullying, since grade school. It intimidated him, and the impact of this affects him to this day. Our middle daughter, in a lesbian family from infancy, and now 37, suffered less through eighth grade because we very carefully interviewed schools until we found a private Catholic school that assured us of their respect for us and for her. When she transferred to a public school, she was intimidated by the casual derogatory comments around her, but suffered more from her teachers' and administrators' lack of understanding of lesbian families. She was denied some services to which she was entitled because one teacher attributed her special learning needs to the fact that her mother was a lesbian. Our youngest son did not suffer from bullying in school until he was in fourth grade. That was the year, 1992, that Measure 9, the first virulent anti-gay ballot measure, poisoned public conversations and the school environment. It is also the time that I began demanding and working for protection for our children and others with sexual minority parents in schools. At about this time, Portland Public Schools developed a training program for all staff. It was about 1993, actually. Life began to improve for our children, but they were still very afraid of having their peers know that their parents were not heterosexual. When our son was in sixth grade, 1994, he was suspended from school for getting into a fight with a child who harassed him because his mother was a lesbian. The school was unable to find the root of the initial harassment and had no policies in place protecting students from discrimination based on sexual orientation. Several years later, the Portland Public Schools, with much encouragement, amended all of their anti-discrimination policies to include sexual orientation and sexual identity. When this son, Alex, was interviewed by Barbara Walters about this incident and several others, and asked how he felt about it, he simply replied, "Sad. Little kids aren't supposed to feel that sad. Little kids are not supposed to feel that sad." Since founding Love Makes a Family in 1992, I have worked with many lesbian and gay parents whose children are frightened, closeted, and way too sad because they do not feel safe in school. I have had teachers and administrators tell me that it's the child's fault because they disclosed that their parent was lesbian or gay. This still happens today. Even in Portland Public Schools, which have improved dramatically through changes in training, staff awareness, and policies protecting students from discrimination. I am currently working with a Portland Public School parent who is afraid to talk to her child's school staff about staff comments that have been made about lesbianism. Homophobic comments by staff are the equivalent of institutional bullying, and they will only stop when there is full support of lesbian, gay, bi, and trans students and parents and teachers. Bullying by children or adults is not simply normal human behavior. It's a part of learned cultural responses deeply tied to our culture of aggression, militarism, and discrimination. To change this culture, we must first know what is happening. This bill provides a mechanism for creating a public picture of the bullying that happens in our schools. We must also educate school staff about differences in race, physical, emotional, and intellectual ability, sexual orientation, gender identity, and family diversity. We must encourage the development of skills that interrupt bullying. This bill provides for that training and will help our children. I still do not anticipate that any legislation will solve the problem of bullying, but I do expect that this legislation will improve life for many children in our schools. On one other occasion, when our son Alex lost a friend because her parents wouldn't let her associate with a child whose parents are lesbians, he said to me, "I know how to solve this problem. If my life were in a garbage can, there wouldn't be a problem." He was 6 years old. Our children's lives do not belong in garbage cans. It is the responsibility of our schools, and of every member of society for that matter, to let all children know that they are valued and will be protected from harm. This legislation sends a message to our kids that they matter and that they are safe when they are under the care of their teachers. Thank you for supporting it.
Thank you.
Please. Hi, I'm Michael Tebb. I'm a speech pathologist, retired from the Salem Kaiser District, and it's obvious that I stutter. I didn't make a write-up on purpose. I wanted to show you. Anyway, the harassment that I went through as a child, I could go on and on and on and on for hundreds of times. It's not merely the laughter. It's not merely the mimicking. It's where it would be embarrassing beyond anything, where a person would, where a small group might ask a girl, go up and ask Mike his name. And the important words that we all have, the most important one obviously is our first name, and those are the ones that would obviously stutter on, and then they'd stand back and laugh. It's that harassment. And in the schools, I would say it happens more in the middle schools, the 6th, 7th, and 8th grades. I've worked in Parrish, I've worked at Hauk, and I've worked at Waldo, and those grades can be very difficult for any of us. And the more it's handled, the more the harassment is handled at those ages, the better off it is. I've intervened with, well, we say probably 5% of the population stutters. And I've intervened on behalf of kids in these schools. And we as adults in the schools, we are mandatory reporters. I mean, this isn't new. We have to follow it up with our building principals and all the rest of them. And they usually follow up to break the pattern. Maybe not to dismiss every kid that laughs in a class when this other one has to read out loud, but it's a pattern that can be interrupted. If it's interrupted in those in the pre-teenage kids, that's where it has to, where the incidences are happening. That's all I have.
Thank you. Members, Chair Gessler and members of the House Committee, I appreciate you taking time to listen to my testimony. Sorry. My name is Paige Stoudemire, and I have two daughters, one who attends North Clackamas School District, who is a second grader, who's been a constant victim of bullying for over a year and a half. It started when she was in first grade by another girl who actually was in the same class as her, and for second grade, I was very adamant about not making them in the same class, and that has happened. However, she has still been a victim of bullying by this girl and harassment. This young girl has bitten my daughter 6 times, where she has broken the skin. She has pulled chunks of Michaela's hair out. And the last incident happened right over before winter break, where they were playing on the playground, where 3 supervisors were out there on the playground. My daughter was playing with a bunch of other girls. This young girl came over and slapped my daughter so hard it left a mark on her face. She went and told somebody, and the person, recess supervisor, told her she was a liar when clearly there was a mark on her face. And then after, when 2 other girls went up to
the recess supervisor to tell her that, yes, this girl had hit my daughter. Then she started to investigate it. She pulled the little girl aside and asked her why she hit her, and her response is because she felt like it and could. I reported it to the school, and they basically said, what do you want us to do? Our hands are tied. There is nothing we can do. I'm like, I want something done. Due to the school closure, I did email the principal and let her know what was going on, and her response is, we're working on, you know, making the second graders have better behavior and setting examples of them to behave better. Well, to me, that is not a clear definition of trying to make a plan of action for this young girl to make her responsible and accountable for her actions. Therefore, I have asked my daughter to be transferred out of the school. I am finding opposition from the principal. She has told me she refuses to sign the transfer paperwork because she does not want to lose funding because of my daughter. And my hands are tied. I can't afford to send my daughter to private school due to the economic crisis, and with my husband's position and mine, I just can't afford to do that. I would like to see this bill, House Bill 2599, pass in order to keep our children safe, and I want the schools to be held accountable and have a plan of action when bullying and harassment become to the point where my daughter feels unsafe and does not want to go to school. I struggle with her as a mother every day getting her ready for school. She cries to me. She tells me she's sick. When I come home, I travel for business. When I come home, she calls me from the school, and I immediately pick her up because she's sick. She knows when I'm coming home, and she calls me probably twice to three times a week to have me come pick her up from school because she doesn't feel safe there. This young girl has also told her she's going to kill her or she's going to do something to make her life miserable. And this is another seven-year-old girl who's telling this to my daughter. Something needs to be done now, and I think our schools need to be held accountable, and teachers, administrators need to all be held accountable in the school and make sure that there is a zero tolerance policy on bullying and harassment. Thank you so much for taking my testimony.
Great. Thank you. And because we still have another four panels, I'm going to excuse this panel unless there are any burning questions. Here. Thank you so much for coming to share your stories. It's very helpful. Panel of one, Edith Mitchell. And I'm going to start asking folks to be about 2 minutes to 3 minutes, or else we're not going to get
through.
I'm going
to be quick. My parking meter is almost expired. Hi, it's actually Edith Mischke. I live in Kaiser. Chair Gelser.
Thank you.
And members of the committee, I've never done this before. I appreciate having the ability to do so. I was harassed myself because I was an Air Force brat. We moved every 2 years, so how many generations ago was that? Four, five, where I suffered bullying. My daughter suffered bullying because she had long blonde hair. Girls would flash her scissors in junior high school, threatening to cut off her hair. Went to administration. I found administration totally useless. At the school district, and I am a former school district employee myself. It was very frustrating. They gave the girls ISS, they gave the girls OSS, and then the girls came back with a vengeance because they knew my daughter.
And ISS finally, has in-school suspension and OSS out of school suspension.
And OSS, right. My daughter never came forward. I just kept asking her why she was wearing her long blonde hair up, and she finally told me. Kids don't come forward. That's the point. We need a way for kids to come forward. Like, I like the idea of all the signs that kids need to come forward, because my kids did not. Let's see. So that was kind of... I'm going to really close this up, because I am going to get a ticket. So I agree. I really think we need to have bullying policies. We need a point person. We need protection for victims when they come forward, because what was happening to them before can be minimal compared to what's happening to them after they come forward. We need strong consequences. And I mean strong consequences. Maybe these kids need to be expelled, you know. I don't know, because they don't have the right to do this to other students. I am for the bill, except for I am not for the part of the bill for protected classes. My daughter was not a protected class. I was not a protected class. My other daughter, who suffered sexual harassment on the school bus weekly, was not a protected class. That's the only part of the bill I have a problem with, is the protected class section, because that would not have helped me or my two daughters. I just think everyone should receive the same under the law, the same treatment under the law. That's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So the next panel, you've signed up as six of you. There aren't six seats, so I'm going to let you all figure out how to do this, and I'm going to give you about 4 minutes. Angela Davis, Adasno Garcia, Becca Miners, Bonte Stiller, Kayla Anderson, and Mayra Madrigal.
It might have been in that group of students.
There's a group of students.
Yeah,
that number that left.
So maybe we'll wait for a moment to see if they are in the overflow room. Debbie, can you check? And then next on deck after that, we will have Sonia Fisher, Annette Kleinfelter, Serena Saracel, and Lori Wimmer. So why don't we go ahead and bring that deck up? I'm thinking that the students have left. And you can pull another chair up if you'd like. There's a loose one.
Representative Gelser, thank you for taking the opportunity to hear our testimony. Serena and I come from Girls Inc. of Northwest Oregon, where we represent the voices of thousands of girls in Oregon. This legislation is important to us because it specifically expands the definition of bullying to go beyond just physical bullying to reflect the patterns of bullying that are most prominent in girls' lives and to sort of obviously underscore the relationship.
Did you start with your name?
I did. No.
I thought I heard you do
Annette
that.
Annette Kleinfelter.
Okay, exactly.
I work with educators and teachers around this issue of relational violence all over the country and in Canada, and have published a curriculum that we use in over 30 cities across the country. And when I'm speaking with educators and school principals, the resounding message is that, of course, they want to have safe learning environments for children. And, of course, they understand the relationship between social learning and academic learning. I think what's missing are the educational opportunities for teachers to be able to identify these behaviors. And what I heard from you, Representative Hopman, is what do we do about it? Because I think that all of us, when we hear these stories, that we're really compelled to make change, but it's sort of in the what that's the important detail around this type of legislation. And so I really encourage, as we move forward with this bill, that we, A, see the value in the consistency, right? Because doing this type of policy work makes sure that every child in Oregon has the same rights that the Eugene School District affords them. So consistency is a key part of this legislation and a key reason why we're supporting it. And it also, it's really bringing some visibility to the importance of social learning. And although there aren't financial resources at this time connected with this bill that would provide for training for school staff, personnel, and parents around these issues, that by setting the bar higher, then hopefully the practices will follow the policy. So, Serena, do you want to share?
Sure. Okay.
There are resources like Girls Inc. that can educate girls and
are you okay? Doing great.
And even adults on how to prevent this sort of damage. In situations like these, everyone gets hurt. For if girls see how other girls can jump on others, saying others too much, just because of how they look or act or dress, they respond in their fear by putting up a defensive wall and isolating themselves or inflicting this pain on others. which is a very bad cycle. With this House bill, hopefully, schools will take more action on these issues of non-physical yet still violent bullying that can leave lifelong scars. Hopefully, these schools may start utilizing organizations that can help.
Great job. Very good job. Thank you, Sonia.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sonia Fisher, and I'm a mother of a child with special needs, an attorney in private practice, and I chair the policy committee for FACT, which is a coalition of a cross-disability coalition of family advocacy organizations across the state. I've had the opportunity to hear many stories about children being bullied, and I'm just going to share a few of them with you today. Sterling and Luke are two middle school boys who have Asperger's syndrome. Both of these boys are smart, articulate, bright, and full of life and promise. Yet they're different. They may not look at you in the eye when you speak to them. They may get confused and mumble their words. Or they may get excited and begin to cry. Or they may stand too close. Both Luke and Sterling have been taunted and bullied in school. Recently, Luke was cornered by a group of boys in the bathroom, and he was called a buttlicker, faggot, retard. Sterling had his picture taken with a cell phone from a boy. The cell phone was passed to the children on the bus while he was called ugly and stupid. Both parents of these children have sought to seek redress from the school district with mixed success. But the key is that these boys have been bullied and taunted. Another more tragic story was with a boy named William, who bright, creative, good-humored. He also has Asperger's. He had been bullied his entire life, and his parents moved him to a variety of from private school to public school. When it came time for him to attend high school, he desperately wanted to attend with his best friend, who was a neighborhood student at the local high school, and so his parents said yes. After the first week at high school, he reported to his mother that he was very, very depressed. Tragically, she found him in her car with his seatbelt twisted around his neck. His family will never know if this was a tragic accident or if William had committed suicide. But later, his mother found out that he had been bullied at school the week before he died. Another key issue that we have to address, which has been sort of touched on today, but these are the tangible things that we have to look at for schools, is that kids that become bullied, they either can take it inward and have tragic results of depression, or even when William's case, suicide, but the also tragic result is that kids that are bullied become bullies. This piece of legislation does something very critical in that it creates a point person at every school district so that kids, whether they're being bullied or they become bullies, have someone to talk to so that they can receive the tools and strategies that they need to stop the cycle. House Bill 2599 is supported by FACT, Families and Community Together, and I urge your support of this legislation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer representing the Oregon Education Association. It's also been my privilege to submit to you testimony from a variety of other organizations, including Disability Rights Oregon, Community Mental Health Coalition, Coalition for Equal Access for Girls, Relationship for Safety and Justice, Urban League of Portland, Three Student Stories, Lane ESD's Equity and Diversity Specialist, and Bully Police Oregon. I thought before I touched on the points in my written testimony, which you have in front of you, that I would answer a couple of the questions that I've heard asked today that I thought maybe you didn't get answers to. The first one was a remark about the whether or not the bill would take effect without the reporting requirement, and I just would point out to you that in Section 3, Sub 4, there is sanctions for failure to follow the law on this, should it become law. Under the Division 22 standards, districts are regularly asked to be accountable for the laws that you all pass, and the department monitors that and should, and oftentimes provide technical assistance if there's some sort of problem. Of course, the ultimate sanction is the withdrawal of state school funds. So there are teeth in this
proposed law. Secondly, it does have an emergency clause that would take effect July 1st. So to those points, in addition to those points, I also wanted to address the fact that this isn't just for protected classes. That was some testimony that you heard. It's inclusive of but not limited to protected classes. So all students are covered by our previous bullying law and this enhancement of that law, which we supported the original law and also the cyberbullying law. This is our third time at bat. And finally, there is no intent in this law, we're pleased to say, it's one of the reasons we support it, to have a zero tolerance policy such that expulsion would be required in all cases. The best part of this proposal, in our view, is that it does leave to districts the opportunity to figure out the best way to craft responses to varying levels of harm that are imposed one student to another, and we think that's appropriate. We think notice should be known to all students. In the schools my children attended, there were always student handbooks sent out at the beginning of the year, and so all of these kinds of policies are always outlined in fairly thorough detail in those handbooks and often are online as well. Our 48,000 members support 2599. Because we believe that student health and safety is essential. It's a part of as a part of learning environment, we want students not only to be focused on their academic well-being, but their emotional and physical health is of importance to us as well. And we know that persistent psychological abuse of students by their peers can erode not only their physical and mental health, as you've heard, but can also impair their ability to learn because they're distracted by their grief, frankly. Recent educational research has been really compelling to me. I wasn't sure when I first heard about this proposal of a policy that it would really meaningfully change the way students relate to each other when they can be so mean. But we've looked at the studies, anywhere from 10 to 50% reduction in the rate of bullying peer-to-peer tends to occur or be experienced by school districts that have these policies that everyone is aware of. And that says a lot. If just the sheer communication of that kind of environment makes students think twice about committing the conduct, they know that it's not permissible. And also we found in some of the studies that students reported that they perceived themselves to feel safer in the school environment. So we think that's very important because it also impacts their ability to feel that they can have a voice in school and also that they can make a positive contribution to their school. They don't feel repressed by that fear of their peer group. We also support the fact that the -1 amendments are before you because we worked on the work group that created those amendments, and so of course we like them. We believe that limiting the workload on schools to the degree possible only makes sense in general, but certainly in these times, and that if the staff training component is optional, we believe that will help in terms of making it more affordable to implement this legislation. We also appreciate that it is not too prescriptive, and I urge you to support the bill with the -1 amendments. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I have a question or two for this panel. Are there questions from other members? Representative Maurer?
Yep, Madam Chair. Lori, I'm looking at 327.103, which is the deficiency rules or non-standard.
Yeah.
And I mean, in here, it holds a school district accountable, but it doesn't hold a teacher, a principal, a school employee accountable for failing to react appropriately to bullying. So, I mean, would you? I guess I just have a really hard time saying we're gonna find the heck out of a child care worker because they failed to meet some training standard or something, and yet we seem to hold harmless school administrators, school teachers, because it always defers back to school funding. So,
Chair Gelser and Representative Maurer, I would say that the school district by school district, each school district is an employer, and when they have policies and procedures, those are the requirements of the job to which our members are held, and there are sanctions and disciplines at the school level. The Division 22 standards have to do with whether or not the district is complying with your requirements relating to the policies and procedures they're responsible for creating. And then beyond that, there are other places in law, of course, that give them the authority as the supervisors of their staff to ensure that the policies, procedures, and rules of their workplace are followed, and our members do follow them.
So I guess following up on that question, I mean, some of the information that we've heard today is really troubling, where we hear kids who are clearly victims of repeated acts of violence. I would assume there might be some sanction under the TSPC for an administrator that failed to protect a student or continued to place a student in harm's way. Would that...
Chair Gelser, I don't know that I'm as familiar with the TSPC piece as your question would imply I ought to be, but I could find out and get back to you.
I think what I'm getting at, I've read this policy and I heard the question that Representative Huffman asked earlier and that others have raised around having teeth in the policy. I think the most important part is having that single source, that single trusted person that a child knows that they can go to and talk to and that will listen to them. I think underlying that for me is the sense that there must be some other recourse in addition to hold accountable adults who knowingly allow children to continue to be at risk. And I'm just wondering what efforts have been made in that way and some of the stories that we've heard. And I think partly because I'm getting a lot of these phone calls in my office, where should I be turning these individuals for help where they do have kids who are injured, kids that are afraid to go to school, and they feel like they're not being heard?
Madam Chair, I think it is always important to communicate with the school district that the student is in, or if it's a private school, and to their administration as well. And I'm assuming that in most districts these policies are evolving. I think that this is an issue. Our awareness is evolving over time. The degree to which bullying has become more than just minor teasing and taunting, and has become dangerous to this degree, has grown over the years. And as that awareness has grown, I think it's true that schools have responded, maybe not all as quickly or as perfectly as we'd like, but that's the point of this bill, is to make sure that we do standardize response and awareness.
Okay. Thank you. I'm clearly losing my committee,
Madam
and there's
Chair,
another committee coming in. Representative Maurer.
He missed a vote.
Yeah.
Yes, so let's finish this first, so give me a minute here. So we are going to close the public hearing on this bill in a minute. Unfortunately, we have not made it through all of our panels. There are others of you that were hoping to testify today. If you didn't have the chance to come up, please leave your written testimony for us. In terms of this bill, I'm going to open a work session. The intention was to work this bill and move it out on Wednesday with the -1 amendment. Follow up with me later if you have other intentions or ideas about that. Representative Innerman?
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Well, one of the things as we're discussing this, I always go back to Head Start performance standards. We were required every year to get training on child abuse. We were required to have bloodborne pathogens. I am an expert on bloodborne pathogens. And a variety of things. And what it really sounds like to me is that we have a lack of consistent training in how to recognize some of these so that staff, and including those classified staff that are out there on the playgrounds, do recognize it and how to address it.
And I think this bill will help us get there. I'm sorry to rush you. I just noticed that we are at 3 o'clock and we've got to do one more thing. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2599. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2599. I'm carrying the work session on House Bill 2599 over to Wednesday, March 11th.
Yeah.
I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2599. Representative Dimbro, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like us to suspend the rules,
mm-hmm.
to reopen a vote on HJM 10. Is it?
To allow Representative Roblin.
To allow Representative Roblin to vote on that bill.
Is there any objection?
No.
Seeing none, Representative Roblin, how do you vote on HJM 10?
Aye.
Representative Rivlin votes aye. Thank you very much. Colleagues, thank you for today. Thank you to all who came to share your stories today. And the House Committee on Education is adjourned.